Welcome to Two Bards, One Mic. Insert interesting music here.
I swear we're actually going to get music one of these days.
Nah.
209er. How's it going, Scott?
Going pretty good. How about yourself, Andy?
Doing pretty well. I mean, we solved
Shh. Don't need to yell.
Yeah, I do, kinda.
No. Oh. No, please.
Well, right before this, guy, we solved a technical issue, which was kind of nice. So, now, has that been present for a little while, so people might have heard it?
It usually came out when I did the...
Noise reduction. Okay. Well... If for some reason out of Scott's channel you've been hearing kind of a pa-pa-pa-pa-pa-pa-pa-pa sort of sound, we figured it out. It is a shielding issue and a Wi-Fi issue. A Wi-Fi-enabled device, specifically a router, was causing interference at the actual recorder level because it was really close to the recording box. So we fixed it.
Yeah.
So hopefully your ears will be happier.
No more.
That was terrifying, and I'm sorry. So, Scott.
Yes, Andy.
You're the one who needs quiet.
Yes.
How you doing?
I'm doing okay.
Why are you so tired?
So we closed Cialis Run last night. The playwright was able to see it six times, I think.
Wow.
Out of a 10-show run.
Hmm.
Loved it every single time, more and more and more. I have the script here. We're going to include for her all of the rewrite / ad-lib / script doctoring that we did. And I think that she really enjoyed what we did and is going to use that, but we're giving it to her in a format that she can change.
Nice.
And then we had a cast party afterwards. Mm-hmm. To wit, yes, I got home at 3:30 in the morning so that I could drive.
Wow.
Yeah. It was good. Closing of shows always sucks because you just spent, you know, 7, 8, 9 intensive weeks with these people.
Mm-hmm.
And by the end, you forget all the shit you went through. And, you know, it's just like, yeah, we really... And everyone, oddly enough, in the cast wanted this to go on like at least another week. Because we felt we finally...
Nailed it.
Figured out.
Right.
You know, oh, okay, here's the pacing. Here's what it's supposed to be. And so, yeah, so it was a very good night, but I'm just a little slower moving this morning. Not hungover. Not feeling any pain.
Just the turbo button's not pressed.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Brain's just kind of responding 2 seconds after I do something. So, oh, funny thing, though. Friday night's performance.
Mm-hmm.
There's a part where there's a vacuum cleaner involved, and
not again.
The show starts. Oh, have we talked about this already?
Well, we talked about your fall. Remember?
Right. So this one was even better.
Okay.
So there's two points. One, when I come running out of the bedroom and trip over it and say, I don't have a vacuum. Where did you get this?
Mm-hmm.
And the second one is right as I'm meeting the girl.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it's always for a good leg. I mean, my legs are just hammered and bruised from hitting the vacuum all the time.
Mm-hmm.
As you're supposed to. Mm-hmm. Keeping it within the confines of my legs, knees up.
Mm-hmm. But not too far up.
I did nut myself once, and it was okay. But this time, I have honestly no idea what happened. I took 2 steps, as I always do. Bam, hit it first on the left. Bam, collect it on the right. Start to go down, grab vacuum cleaner, hold it. Mm-hmm. Oh, handle looks like a penis. We know where this is going. Hee, hee, hee. And no, I ended up, my body took a third step that none of the rest of it was ready for. And I went down, I split my pants open, and then I split my knee open.
Mm-hmm. Now, this is both the same spot. You split your pants at the knee and your knee at the knee versus last time when you were worried it was going to be looking out your back door.
Yeah, right.
Right.
Yeah, and I knew the back door was fine. I knew the pants weren't ripped there.
Mm-hmm.
But I knew there was some fairly good damage on my knee.
Mm-hmm.
And I went, the only way I could save myself was the back of the chair, which I pushed forward about 3 feet.
No.
And I was just like, got up and I'm like, ah, this doesn't feel swell. Move the chair back,
mm-hmm.
get the vacuum, put it on. We go through the scene and then there's the wooing scene.
Mm-hmm.
And I sit down on the couch and I look down and there's this huge rip across on the knee of the pants. And I'm thinking to myself, while I'm saying lines and in this scene, shit, I gotta wear these in act two.
Ha.
So get done the scene, get off stage, get the needle and thread, start whip stitching.
Yep.
And I'm like, okay, this looks good. This looks good on this end. Okay, we'll turn it. And I did it inside out and I turned it right side. And then all of a sudden you just saw these big Frankenstein lines. Oh. And I was like, okay, well, he's going to wear jeans. And oddly enough, members of the audience that night were all like, we really connected when he came out in jeans. It looked like he'd grown as a character.
And are you kidding? Like, that's a... So that's going to go into the notes.
Yeah.
Okay. Wow.
So, yeah, it was interesting. Really good run. Really wonderful people. Mm-hmm. Made some new friends, as I always do. Maybe serving on the board of Renton Civic Theater.
Ooh, very nice.
So I was asked if I would be interested in doing that.
Mm-hmm.
And then next year, I'm pretty sure I'm doing 12 Angry Men there for Bill. So,
well, I mean, not to talk about typecasting, but
yeah, I'm playing all 12 Angry
all
Men.
All 12 Angry Men. The angriest you've ever seen.
Yes.
There you go. A 12 Angry Men reboot where it's multiple personality disorder and it's all in Scott's head and it's all about him judging another personality.
Oh, there we go.
Yeah. And that other personality is innocent, but it takes a lot of work to get there. Yeah, by the way, spoiler alert, if you haven't seen the fucking film or the play, it's been around long enough to where I think that's fine.
Yeah.
It's like Death of a Salesman, you know. The fate of Willie Loman should well be known at this point.
Yeah.
So, cool. So what else, anything else good happened this week or bad or whatever you want to talk about? Let's talk, Scott. How was your week?
It was good. Mm-hmm. I didn't get to work anymore on the LED light.
How did that make you feel?
Vulnerable.
Okay. Now, how do you think this ties back in with what we were talking about last week?
I think it's completely different.
You don't feel it's related to your nascent Peter Panism or any of the issues you have feeling yourself growing older?
Well, when you put it that way,
mm-hmm,
duh.
Mm-hmm, 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 mm-hmm. Do you think this all ties back to that incident on the playground?
I thought we weren't going to talk about the incident on the playground anymore.
Yeah, well, you fucking took my cards, and you better fucking give them back.
No.
This is why you don't go to therapists you went to school with, see?
I have.
Those were expensive Garbage Pail Kids cards, like $1.
Yeah.
I bought them as singles. From Eddie, the weird kid who sniffs glue. He bought a lot of glue.
That should have been in the play.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, not... did some yard work.
Sorry, dude.
That's kind of the biggie. And we're rug hunting. So that's...
We've been tracking one for months.
Oh, I wish we had.
It's breeding cycle. We're pretty sure we know where it's going to feed this autumn. So we've loaded up the 50 cal.
Yeah. Yeah, we've made some good progress, and we're in the same color palette. Now it's just...
Where's one rug hunt? Persia, I'd imagine.
Shapes.
Like Iran would be a good place to rug hunt.
Yes, yes. Egypt.
Egypt, yeah.
So, yeah, that's just an interesting process.
Don't do Turkey. They're all really small there.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, wait, those are for praying, which is what you'll be doing to the rug that you're hunting.
Please be a good rug. I don't want to pay the return shipping.
Bleeding them is the worst part. It's the worst part. Could you imagine if rugs... I mean, I guess some are skins, but for the most part, rugs are rugs.
Right.
Unless they are bearskin rugs or tiger skin. Not a lot of monkey skin rugs out there.
No.
First of all, it'd be terrifying because they don't really have that thick pelt so much as they look like hairy humans.
Right.
So
you'd just have that little thing in your bathroom and you'd be like, oh, I stepped up. That's
just okay. My monkey rug.
Just my monkey rug.
My ape drapes. So
how about you?
Well, let's see. My week has been pretty okay. I'm a little sad we've only got... So right now, this contest that we're running isn't going to be very hard because we have 3 entries.
Oh, okay.
If nobody else enters, we're done. Nothing has come in on the Bards at twobards.com, so everything has been in the Discord channel.
Mm-hmm.
And I believe we have 3 entries currently. So, reminder, if you are interested in playing some games with the Bards and you're in the Seattle area, or can be in the Seattle area sometime in May, please hop onto Discord under Contest Entries, or send us an email at thebards@twobards.com and let us know, because we're going to be picking 3 people currently out of 3 to come up and go through an Air D&D experience with us, which I think will be very enjoyable. Dennis Nickel, Bard, who doesn't get to enter because he's putting it on, though that would be weird if you did, Dennis, is going to be hosting us in his amazing game room, playing through some 5th edition. Hopefully some Bardly story elements will be pulled in, whether we are Bards or not. Though I don't know, maybe we should be a 2 Bard party. The Bardy party.
Mm-hmm.
Be kind of fun. I am going to walk back the all Bard party. I don't think that's a good idea, the more I think about it. Well, okay. I mean, I knew it was a bad idea, but I don't even think it's a good idea.
Okay.
I think it would be a terrible... I don't think anybody would have fun. So we need at least, when you got the Barge, you need at least like 1 battle turtle out there.
Yes.
So you can buff them and they can go crazy.
Maybe we could see if we can make a bardic battle turtle.
Ooh, a battle bard. Battle bards. Huh. Now I'm thinking about battle bots and I'm gone. So anywho, that was part of my week. Additionally, I am playing a new game. So there was Far Cry 5 and there is still Far Cry 5. I've been playing Far Cry 5 for a while. In fact, if you are a patron, you just got a little taste of some of the bugs from a single playthrough. I ran a single playthrough, 45 minutes maybe,
mm-hmm.
and captured 3 bugs that I felt were worthy of sharing with our patrons. So that's hanging out there. So enjoy that. But additionally, we picked up God of War.
Mm.
Some people call it God of War 4,
mm-hmm.
which I guess is technically correct. Though it is so different from the previous God of Wars. Because there's only 1 God, Kratos. So God of Wars, previous games. So it's so different from the previous games that I would almost consider it its own thing.
Hmm.
Though it is still Kratos. He does still beat the fuck out of a lot of things. This time he's in Norse mythology instead of Greek mythology where he started.
Okay, so I have seen the trailers and previews
yes.
for this, because it's the young kid and then this
yes.
huge gray...
Gray with red. Yeah, it looks like war paint. That's actually his skin.
Oh, okay.
So he's a god.
Mm.
One of the best ways I ever heard to describe God of War, it's like... In most games, if you need the skull of Eros, you have to go through a bunch of traps and a bunch of puzzles and all this stuff. In God of War, if you need the skull of Eros, Eros is about to have a really bad day. So, because you're going to go get it. So it's similar to that. I don't want to get too spoilery, but I need to get a little spoilery. So stop listening for the next couple of minutes if you are planning on playing it. This is very early game, so don't worry about me spoiling any big story moments. Mm. This is just like very early game. So it starts out with his wife and the boy's mother dying. And I believe he is the boy's father. Like, he's actually the boy's father. But it's kind of murky right now. I'm not entirely sure if he's 100% the boy's father or if the woman Kratos fell in love with had already had a child. So he's an acting father. Not quite sure. Mm. But I think I posted a spoiler summary on the Discord. And that spoiler summary was... young boy helps his illiterate foreign father.
Okay, now I know what return, that was. Okay.
Yeah, put their mother to rest, or put his mother to rest. Because that's basically what it is. He can't read any Nordic runes.
Mm-hmm.
So the boy has to... And the boy's name is Atreus, so the whole time you're like, Atreyu, but you get over that eventually. He calls him Atreus once, I think. The menus refer to him as Atreus, but what you hear most of the time is... Get in the boat. Boy, come here. Boy. And the guy doing the voice, I wish I remembered his name off the top of my head. Did you ever watch Stargate?
Yeah.
Okay. So a black actor played an alien with like a kind of a head. Yeah, that's the guy who does Kratos' voice.
Oh, awesome. So
amazing voice. He's been doing the voice for a while, so it doesn't quite fit the story, but it totally fits the character, so I'm fine with it. Very, very interesting. Kratos is fairly quiet.
Mm-hmm.
He talks when he needs to, so that's a lot of fun. So you are on a trek to take the ashes of your ex, or your ex as in dead, wife to a resting place on a mountain, because that's just how Nordic shit works.
Mm-hmm.
Almost all of those early pantheist religions were about mountains. They loved mountains, right? I mean, Japan getting closer to it. It is. You climb it, you get closer to a god. They look like gods. They disappear sometimes. We know this. We live in the shadow of an angry god.
Mm-hmm.
In Seattle, Mount Rainier, in fact, has its own like set of local custom around it.
Yeah.
So clear days, it's not that the sun is out; it's that the mountain is out.
Mm-hmm.
The mountain's not out. The mountain's not creeping on you because it watches you. Oh, it watches you
all the time.
It's pretty interesting. Sometimes the mountain wears a hat. I said jaunty, not rakish. That resonates with me a little bit. But as you're prepping, so Kratos is worried his son is not ready to be alone, and he knows that, you know, people are out to get him. People have always been out to get him. That's why he's in Midgard suddenly instead of the pantheon of Rome Greece. Mm. He's no longer fighting Olympians. He's trying to get away, so he relocates to Midgard, which is Earth, right? I think so. Yeah, that seems right to me. This is deep cut Norse mythology. This isn't, oh, well, I've seen Thor, I'll get a lot of these references. This is, oh, I've taken 2 years of college Norse mythology, I'll get some of these references, kind of cut. So one of the things that happens, obviously he Viking funerals her, burns her on a pile of birch.
Mm-hmm.
That's how the game starts, is you chop down a tree, which is, it sounds ridiculous, but it's actually, it's very moving. It's very powerful. The way he holds the tree, because it's the last one. So he's got to say goodbye. Like, this is it. This is the last trial he has to do before he can release her, you know, her body to Stovakort. No, wait, that's Klingon. It's pretty moving. Yeah, okay, I'll just say. So there's a knock at the door after you burn her and then try to take your son to go out hunting because you were trying to get him like prepped to to, you know, be on his own.
Mm-hmm.
You run into some dead people who are also on fire, kind of Dark Souls-y in terms of how they look. Mm-hmm. This is not a Souls-y feeling game. Even on difficult, it is difficult. I don't want to say it's not Souls-like because it's not difficult. It's not Souls-like because it's not enemies all the time.
Mm.
Right? There is respite. There is puzzle solving. There are moments where you can take in and enjoy the scenery, which, oh my God, there are huge story moments. There, you have to go pick flowers at one point. It's fantastic. Mm. So basically, after the hunt, which is a miserable failure, like it's the boy's angry at you because you told him he wasn't ready. You're a dick about it because you're a god of war. You don't really have a lot of people skills. Seriously, lowest on his resume, people skills. Just not even... Can he rip a mountain in half and then shove someone's head into the magma beneath? Yeah, he can do that. You know, is he good on the phone? No. No, not really. So you go home and there's a knock at the door. Well, there's a giant rumbling and then a knock at the door. And you go out and, Conor McGregor or whatever the fuck that guy's name is from UFC is out there hanging out. He's like all tatted up and he's like, hey, I'm here to fight you because I'm a wee... But he doesn't have an accent like that. It's just seems like he should. He's got like dreadlocked beard and shit like that. And he's just this scrawny looking dude. He's like, I know who you are and I know what you'd be. And there's no accent, but they're really in my memory. There wants to be. So the leprechaun from American Gods starts smacking Kratos and it's like, oh, this is not going to end how you want it to end. He's like, oh, but I think it is. And so Kratos punches him good. And then he punches back. Real good. Your first he's called the Stranger, and this is where we get into spoiler territory. He's called the Stranger. There is one invulnerable Norse. I mean, there are a few that are pretty close to invulnerable, but there's one who's straight up invulnerable, Baldur. So it's Baldur. You're fighting Baldur. Mm-hmm. And the whole story behind Baldur is he was afraid of death, so Frigg, his mother, made him impervious to all things. So he spent his life basically avoiding attacks from other gods who like to do this for fun because they were dicks. Because Norse, why not?
So he hid behind his gate, right?
Yeah.
Baldur's gate.
Okay. Right. Turns out it was just about the speed he walked.
Oh.
Baldur's gallop is actually much more fun.
Mm.
So you fight Baldur, who just keeps regenerating over and over and over again. And that's your treatment to boss fights. And that's where people are like, oh, this is a Souls-like. It's not. It's not a Souls-like. You can crank the difficulty up and the battles can be Souls-like, I suppose, the individual battles, but the game is very much not that. Mm. It's story-driven. It's not fully open world, which I guess that's kind of a Souls-y thing. Souls takes you from point A to point B pretty much. It's not an open world wander around thing. It's go do these trials. So in that sense, I suppose it is, but overall it just doesn't feel the same. The beauty of this game, I don't know how to explain it. I have seen no game on PC, which is far more capable, nor on Xbox, which basically doesn't care about actually putting out good first-party titles. All they care about is, you know, making sure the pixel counters are happy. I've seen nothing that looks like this. They added color to it. It's not a muddy PlayStation mess. It's beautiful. It is beautiful. The visual experience of this game is outstanding.
So this is on your PS4?
This is on the PS4. Okay. It's only on PS4. Because it's a Sony first party. It was developed by Santa Monica Studios, which is a wholly owned Sony developer. So that's pretty cool. It sucks for, you know, you who has an Xbox One, it sucks for a lot of people. And it would be, you know, like on PC, the things you could do with it would be beyond belief, but they didn't have to worry about making it cross-platform, right?
Right.
So they could focus on the hardware they had and make the hardware they had just sing. There is like gauze-type fabric, multi-layer gauze-type fabric that folds over itself in some places. So you can see through it, but you can like see the individual It's really neat, and it's all got volume and depth. It's not like just a bunch of flat. There's no soap, you know. Like I know I've complained about the Far Cry soap thing for. It is just visually outstanding, but the best part is it also plays really well.
Mm-hmm.
It feels good to. It's got a Thor hammer mechanic, so you line up your shot with the left trigger. You throw your axe. The axe goes, blah, and then you hit the triangle button, because they don't know their alphabet, I guess. Hit the triangle button, and it comes flying back to your hand no matter where it is, and it will hit people on that path. And so, you know, they use that as a story thing. Sometimes the axe won't come back because there's a story element going on. You know, that's kind of neat. You meet a couple of dwarves who forge the axe. I'm pretty sure they're going to be the dwarves who forge Mjolnir as well. They're really good at making heavy weapons that come back to your hand. So I'm going to guess that that's who they end up being. You end up basically controlling the Rainbow Bridge to get to all the other realms. There's the Life Tree and all that stuff. So without getting too far into it, there's going to be some giant fighting in Jotunheim for sure. I haven't gotten to it yet, but you go to the Dark Elf realm. They all look like bugs. It's really fucking cool. So highly recommend God of War. Again, we recommended Far Cry based on how buggy it was and how fun it is to play with. But this is polish on polish. This game is, we ran into, I think, one bug and it fixed itself. But for the most part, this game is solid. It's done. The game is done.
Nice.
Which is really nice and really not usual anymore.
Mm-hmm.
So I did that a little bit today. And then tonight I'm probably going to go see The Quiet Place with Bo and Aaron. Or A Quiet Place. Is it John Krasinski?
Krakowski? Suspense / horror thriller.
Quiet, yeah. Yeah, so... Going to go see that tonight. So hopefully I'll have some information on that. I also want to see Super Troopers 2 at some point, and I think that might be a good BARD outing if we can figure out how to make it work.
Yeah.
So that'd it's be cool. Just not playing at the Admiral. So I love the Admiral. It's close. Oh. It's quiet.
Yeah.
I hate going downtown, and I think Super Troopers 2 is only going to be downtown. So
yeah. But well, we can go down to South Center.
We can go to South Center too, and that is a much better theater, I think. Well, the parking anyway.
I'm going to try and get... We'll see if Jen's up for it, but we're going to try and get to Ready Player One tomorrow.
Oh, cool.
So
I still haven't seen it yet, so you'll report?
I'll be able to report on that, I hope. She just pulled 3 12s in a row, so she may be a little beat and then has to go back and do 2 12s Tuesday and Wednesday.
Mm-hmm.
So she may want to take Monday to just say, fuck all, I'm going to sleep.
Going to sleep, going to rest, yeah.
So
that's about it. So should we get to our bardic question of the week? You're sniffling enough to where I think we should just let's get through this.
Yeah,
this guy today.
I didn't know that today was going to be this bad, but man, allergies are just kicking my ass right now.
All right. So a quick reminder: our bardic question last week is, "What is your favorite example of something jumping the shark?" Without giving the actual example of jumping the shark from Happy Days,
right?
So we start off with Patrick Bowden, Pat Dragon, who says, I think the one that jumps to my mind, the shark in his mind, is when Indiana Jones survives the nuclear blast and the fallout in the lead-lined fridge. So nuking the fridge has actually taken over jumping the shark in the lexicon for a lot of people, especially in nerd culture. That was pretty stupid. I mean, keep in mind... You're in a series where a guy pulled another guy's heart out while he was still alive.
Right.
So, suspension of disbelief a little bit. I don't mind the fridge thing so much. Even the radiation side of things, because it would have just melted the fucking fridge. But, you know, the fact that he would have been a Slurpee when he landed, I completely agree with that. I think there's so much more in that film that jumped the shark. I think nuking the fridge is like a
Which
good...
Which one is this? This Crystal
this is
Skull?
Four, Crystal Skull.
Okay.
Aliens, Shia LaBeouf, Also, I think Shia LaBeouf was in it.
Mm-hmm.
So as a Mutt. Mutt was his name, with CGI monkeys. The CGI monkeys to me were a bigger jump of the shark, to be honest. Mm. The CGI in it was worse than the fridge, hands down, to me, personally. But I think we can all agree.
Rob McLennan says, I was thinking the same movie.
Oh, but, hey.
But Aliens, seriously? So he must have been referring... He didn't capitalize it, so I didn't think he was talking about the movie. And then I was going to have some serious things to say if he was saying that Aliens 2 jumped the shark.
No.
So, and then Rob continues on, as he has said, to that, let me add the concept of taking a large type children's book and then, quote, adapting it into a 3 hour long movie.
Into three 3 hour long movies. He's talking
into three 3 hour long movies.
He's talking about your old To Hobbit. That's almost, I can almost guarantee that's a Hobbit thing he's calling to.
Okay.
So, yeah. So Aliens, he's talking about the aliens, obviously, were at the end of Kingdom of the Crystal Skull, where the crystal heads were giant alien heads, and the whole spaceship thing showed up, and I think that's where he's going with that. I can go ahead and
be right back.
Yeah, go ahead and vamp. Go take care of your sinuses. But I'm guessing the concept of taking a large type, as in large type for eyes, children's book and adapting it into three-hour long movies, that feels like he's talking about The Hobbit. Which I completely understand, and we all know did not work well. So that jumped the shark more on a career level. Peter Jackson and his Tolkien adaptations kind of jumped the shark with The Hobbit. I absolutely agree with that. Scott and I have talked before, obviously, about the practical hunter orc that was fan-fucking-tastic looking. The makeup test was just incredible. The guy who did it was incredible. And then they
Uruk-hai.
And then they painted over all of it. There were no Uruk-hai at this point because this was The Hobbit. This was, what, 60 years earlier or something like that? So,
once again, going to prequels, way cleaner than what you've already set up in.
Yeah, and you know what's sad is the first one wasn't so bad. They could have cut a bunch out of it and told the whole story in the 3 hours for that first one, though. It got real stupid. It got real stupid. And then when you get to the Battle of Lake Town, it's garbage.
Yeah.
Legitimate, cartoony, everybody's made of plastic, CGI garbage. So I think that's where he was going with that. And if I'm wrong, Rob, please correct this, but that's what it feels like. Casey Lee writes, Star Trek, The Next Generation, them making Captain Jean-Luc Picard a Borg. I actually really like that story trope. Locutus is a good storyline, I feel. The problem with Locutus is they now know how to cure Borgism. So if you can cure Borgism, the Borg are no longer a threat. This is one of Star Trek's big problems to me. And we'll talk about it if you have any opinions on this. Mm. But one of Star Trek's big problems is they rush to solving a problem in a show in such a way that they don't think of the ramifications of that problem. This is like giving a character super speed, the Flash, and not thinking about how that affects the surrounding area really truly at all, which when you get right down to it, the Flash is one of the most terrifying people, and you would never ever want to be in the vicinity of him when he uses his superpowers. He would suck up all the oxygen in the room immediately, like from your perspective, immediately. The force of anything he does, just look up anything about the general theory of relativity and how as speed increases, velocity increases, mass increases, then the energy to move that mass also has to increase. If you've got something moving near the speed of light that has mass, you are going to fuck up everything. He's going to light the air on fire. It's the pressure wave of him moving from one end of the room to the other is going to end all life in that room. All of it. And probably for a couple of hundred yards in any direction.
Mm-hmm.
So the ramifications, Star Trek is in that boat where it's like, we want him to be a Borg. How do we undo it? We undo it. Okay, but what about the other Borg? Nah, we're going to say something like, you know, he was kept slightly, because he had a name, right? He was kept an individual mm-hmm. by the queen, like on purpose. And I don't think the queen was in it at that point. It was just Locutus. He became like a leader of the Borg. So there was the whole thing with like the Borger collective, except for a few of them. A few of them are individuals. And then there was that whole fuck up where they let Hugh go, and Hugh ended up creating a basically a Borg virus that made a bunch of Borg free minds. That was bad. So the whole thing was all fucked up. But yeah, I actually really liked the storyline and the character development that Locutus gave to Picard.
Mm-hmm.
It gave him something he really never showed, which was true fear. Mm-hmm. He feared the Borg after that. He felt them. It bothered him. It was something that was always in the back of his mind. It was a real threat, and I really liked that. But where I agree with Casey is, and this is with time travel in Star Trek, this is with diseases, with they can cure anything whenever the person has high enough billing, and it just it's really bothersome. I think the way they said so in what was it in First Contact, basically to get back to their own time, it was do what they did but backwards, and Data was like, yes sir, and he did what they did but backwards, and they were back in their own time. Well, guess what? Now you know how to do time travel. You win everything 100%.
Yeah.
So, yeah. How do you feel about it?
Because they unborged him then, right?
In sick bay.
Right.
It was like a fucking, it was like curing a cold in the future.
Right. I thought that it was, like you, a really cool storyline.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it helped revitalize
mm-hmm.
Patrick Stewart wanting to.
He wanted
as
to
an
act.
Actor,
yeah,
you know, here's something where I get to still be this character, but now I'm not this character.
Mm-hmm.
And what does that mean? And all of that. And mm-hmm. so from that standpoint, I thought it was really great. But yes, it was like, okay, now we're screwed. That's Captain Picard forever.
Mm-hmm.
And then it wasn't.
Yeah.
Just... And then it was like, but... Okay, I thought he was assimilated.
Right. And Borg nanobots take all of like 5 seconds to turn anybody else into irrecoverably into a Borg.
Right.
So they, I will always blame Brennan Braga. This is Brennan Braga just not fucking caring and just wanting to tell a story whether or not it makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
There are places to do that. You did it really well with Inner Light. How'd you do it? Gave him a different life. Cool, we're doing this thing, but it's in his mind, and it's a different life he gets to live in his mind. Perfect. Nothing's canon. Fantastic. He lives the life. He knows how to play the flute now, or piccolo, or whatever the fuck it was. But you don't have to worry about him, like, you don't have to worry about any of that shit, because yeah. It all happened in his head, you know? Same thing with, that's happened to a number of people. It happened to Crusher, I think. It's happened to a shit ton of people.
Mm-hmm.
But... Yeah, he was a fucking Borg, for real. Like, he was a Borg for a long time, and you're telling me they just pop that shit right out of him and he's fine. Meh.
So, Dennis to the D to the O to the double G.
Nickel.
Nickel. says, and I love him for going here, the one that sticks out immediately is Ace Ventura Pet Detective 2. The reason is applicable to most comedy sequels. Part of what makes the original funny or good is the character being outrageous, but interacting in a generally, quote, normal world that we can usually relate to somehow. Like in Ace Ventura Pet Detective 1, when he's kicking around the UPS package at the beginning, versus how we have seen videos of package throws or mistreatment. When the character becomes ridiculously over the top, and when the world becomes also just as outlandish or crazy, it is no longer something that we can relate to, and this is what epitomizes Ace Ventura Pet Detective 2 as the example of that standing out for him.
Yeah, I totally get that.
I
do love the individual scenes, like the scene where they throw the spears into his legs.
Mm-hmm.
That scene is funny. That was Damon Wayans, right?
I think so.
Yeah. That scene was really funny. But...
Is it Damon or Marlon?
Well, Marlon was busy doing, like, heavy shit, right? Yeah. At the time. Wasn't Marlon doing, like, Requiem for a Dream and shit like that? That dude's got fucking chops. He is a good actor. I mean, Damon Wayans is great, too. If you ever watch Bamboozled, it will make you sick to your stomach. He's so good. And then he cloned himself.
And Dungeons & Dragons, too.
Oh, right.
But don't blame Marlon on that.
And then he cloned himself and named his clone Damon Wayans, which I thought was really interesting because that is Damon Wayans. Same voice, looks exactly the same, does the same kind of movies. Didn't he do a dance-off movie, Damon Wayans Jr.?
I'm not sure.
Anyway, so I liked parts. I liked scenes from Ace Ventura 2. He's absolutely right, I feel.
Yeah. So. And what goes wrong with everything, like the American Pie movies.
Oh, God.
And Hangovers. And although American Pie, when it came back to American Wedding, redeemed itself because it got out of that chug-along and said, okay, let's just stick a pin in that, move on to this other thing.
Right.
Then it was funny again because it was
Meet the Parents, Meet the Fockers.
Yeah.
Right? Like, so Meet the Parents, uncomfortable because... You don't know anything about Ben Stiller's character.
Mm-hmm.
You just know that everything's going wrong for him.
Right.
Right? And you know that... So he gets into this really uncomfortable thing. There was a whole, like, half a... Like maybe a 3/4 of a decade where shitting on Ben Stiller was how you wrote a film, period.
Yeah.
It started with There's Something About Mary, and it just kept going. But yeah, like, I felt like Meet the Fockers was garbage. Because it kind of exactly what Dennis is saying. Now we understand the world enough to know who's actually wrong. Nobody learned anything from the first movie. We're dealing with the parents. We're dealing with his parents now being thrown into the mix. They're also absurd, which makes no sense then. Like the absurdity of her parents are now sort of just tossed under the rug because his parents are so absurd. And this is just like his life. And it's stupid. It was stupid. It was a bad choice. So, so do we have a good Bardic question this week?
Somewhere in this,
I know we wrote
pigsty of a desk. I wrote one down and I have not, that's on the list this week is to finally get the office sorted.
Oh, okay.
So I do not have one, at the ready. I thought that I would.
Well, let's ask, let's go back to something a little more practical, like we kind of used to do.
Okay.
And let's ask, you are going to be basically stuck on an island or in the woods or something like that. You get a choice of 3 items, and these aren't items like a fully stocked RV. Like these have to be 3 individual items, but we're also not going to say like, oh, you have to, you know, if you want a flashlight, you need batteries plus a lens, but no, it'll be the whole thing.
So it could be a Swiss Army knife.
Yes.
It's about the most multiple objects in one.
Right.
Okay.
So you're going to be stuck in a survival situation. You don't know the parameters of the situation, but you get to pick 3 items, right out of the, you just get them. A couple of caveats. Satellite phones don't work. Okay, so the communication items will not function in this thing. So you can't call to be rescued no matter what. No matter what, nothing will get out. Okay. So what items do you choose?
And do we know whether we're going into a hot climate, cold climate?
We know nothing. We know nothing about the climate we're going into. And it's not to say you won't find items when you get there.
Right.
This is a game design question. What do you get just out of the gate? Or what do you want to have just out of the gate? And for the sake of this argument, we'll say something like, if you take a gun, you get some ammo for that gun. If you take a bow, you'll get bow and arrows. You'll get the stuff that is needed to make it happen.
Right.
But you don't get, like I said, you don't get to pick a fully stocked RV or a chest full of whatever I need or, you know, nothing like that. So like I can think of a couple, like this gets tough because you need food, water, and fire to kind of live, right?
Yeah, I was gonna say that you definitely need to have some sort of flame producing object.
Right.
Whether that's flint and steel, which is a little more difficult, or if we're talking about in-game, then, you know, an unlimited and unusually large box of matches would be the easiest.
Yeah, that would be nice. Yeah, so I haven't actually thought about this. I just wanted to come up with something, and I looked at your tactical flashlight and was like, let's ask a weird question about video games, kind of. So I think that getting basically, I don't know that I'd want flint and steel, because I've actually lit a fire with that before, and that was under extremely ideal conditions, and it still took like many hours. So I don't think I'd want that. I think I'd want something a little more, you know, reliable. So either something like a torch, or a torch being not a flashlight, but an actual like torch, where I could, you know, get it lit, light other stuff with it, maybe use it for other things. But the, you know, I mean, it's not, it's a finite amount of fuel. So, probably a like a bow, an arrow, maybe kind of thing, just because there's a lot of stuff you can do with that. Like a gun is, it's loud.
It's loud.
So you might end up either fucking yourself over massively, or, you know, scaring away all of your potential food. So a bow and arrow also has recoverable ammo, which is really nice.
And you can't tie a piece of string to a bullet to shoot it up over.
That's exactly where. Yep, totally. So something to make fire, a bow and arrow, and then probably, if I'm allowed, so because of how I've set this up, some type of water purification device. Probably a still would be the best way to do that. I've got fire, so I can make that work. So we'll do a still to do water purification. That feels like a good starter kit.
So. Yeah, I was going with the fire. Bow and arrow was definitely, I'm assuming that we have clothing on.
Yes, yeah. This isn't Naked and Afraid. The ratings are better.
And I was going with the same thing for you as water. I was just thinking of a because I wanted to slightly cheat in that it's one of those sticks, you just pour the water through it, and it purifies it.
Yeah.
So that I could start with a 1 gallon jug of water.
Oh, nice.
With that in the top.
Right.
So that I can replenish it.
Right. Yeah, that's good too. And I mean, those give you like 1,000 gallons. So
yeah,
that's plenty for, you figure with exertion, you should be drinking a gallon a day probably. You can probably ration down to a 0.5 gallon a day.
Yeah.
That's 2,000 days. You're fine. Yeah, you're fine. So,
by that time, hopefully you found actual potable water.
Exactly. Cool. So there's our question. Now we should probably answer some of your questions. Casey Lee asks, for your next video podcast, can the bards tell the story of them meeting in the style of a cheesy romance? You know, gaze into each other's eyes and start. Then a guest can yell freeze. Oh my God, we're doing improv games. After a few moments, and you can take the style suggestion changes on the fly. I would love to see what you guys rock improv. Smiley. That, or we could actually just do an improv show. That would be kind of fun.
Well, they're all improv shows.
Well, you know what I mean, though.
Oh, like, not on the podcast.
Like an actual improv show. Something along the lines of the old Gamers Live-ish sort of thing.
Yeah.
Or something along, you know, something like that. That would be kind of fun.
Yeah. And yes, as soon as we get a space where we can do a live podcast and get interaction, that would be great. Or maybe at Snake River.
Ooh, Fandom Con.
Fandom Con.
Because Comic Con is suing everybody.
Yeah, I should talk to Tangle about that. What's the one that we used to do in Spokon?
We did, it was like Whose Line?
Whose Line.
So it was just a bunch of improv games.
Right.
So we did.
That'd be cool.
Yeah, because we did props. We did scenes from a hat. We did all the old ones.
Yeah.
Freeze.
I think we did the style.
Yep.
So, Rob McLennan writes and asks, our childhoods were filled with cartoons that were little more than advertisements for toy lines. Do you have a favorite half-hour-long commercial series, or were they all just crap?
Man, I loved cartoons. I loved Thundercats. I loved He-Man. I went back and tried to watch a few of them. A lot of them don't hold up. Pretty much none of them hold up. A few are okay. A few are fine. Real Ghostbusters is surprisingly good. Surprisingly good. Well thought out stories, especially season one. Well thought out stories. Continuity. Very good dialogue. Adult dialogue. I would say Real Ghostbusters is probably like kind of king of the hill. Probably top of the heap when it comes to advertisement cartoons. It was surprisingly well written.
Yeah. I don't know that I really watched most of those. I guess the quote commercial or advertisement one would be G.I. Joe for me.
Right.
I watched Thundercats, I watched He-Man because they were on.
Yeah.
And you know, they were okay, but I was never really like jazzed like I was with G.I. Joe versus Cobra and all that stuff. Well,
and you also, I mean, when you were at the age where you were a target for that kind of cartoon, they didn't have a lot of cartoons like that.
No.
They were, you know, Magilla Gorilla didn't really sell you anything.
No.
Scooby-Doo didn't sell you anything.
And see, that's what I was going to say. Scooby-Doo and Flintstones were my favorite cartoons growing up.
Flintstones sold you cigarettes. But other than that.
And shavers.
Oh,
with bees in them.
Yeah. Well, didn't they actually do like a Brill Cream commercial at one point?
Oh, I'm sure they did.
They did adult commercials. They didn't do kid commercials.
No. Yeah. They are the spokespeople for Halifax Bank in the UK, my bank. It was all Hanna-Barbera, Flintstones, the cat, Cool Cat.
Oh, wow. Cool Cat.
And
Hepcat. But he had a first name. It was like TC Hepcat or some shit like that.
Yeah. And I mean, they've got all these American 60s, 70s cartoons, Hanna-Barbera stuff that's.
I wouldn't want Barney associated with any of my products in the UK.
Yeah.
Because see, Barney means trouble. We're in deep Barney.
That's what I was going with.
Nice. Patrick Bowden, Pat Dragon, says, oh, thank you, sir. If we were to create a new sports or energy drink, what would it be called and what flavor would it be? Well, I mean, I think it'd be Pobarty Sweat for me. And what flavor would it be? Musky.
Pobarty?
So Pocari Sweat is a Japanese / Chinese / Korean. I think I want to say Pocari is centered in Japan. But it's moved to all of the surrounding Asian markets. But it's basically an electrolyte drink called Pocari Sweat because it makes, you know, back to Ghostbusters. They legitimately did this where they made a drink that. I'm not even kidding. In the cartoon, they made a drink that replenished you from sweating. And everyone was grossed out. And I'm like, but that's what Gatorade is. So,
yeah.
Pocari Sweat is basically white, like milky water looking Gatorade. So, Pobarty Sweat. And maybe it wouldn't taste musky, but it would probably have a hint of scotch to it. Peaty. It would taste peaty. Nothing says refreshment on a hot summer day while playing soccer. Than peaty salt water, essentially.
Even I would be hard pressed to drink that.
We're on it.
I was thinking something like Bombard Stick or something.
Oh yeah.
Its flavor would be a ungodly amalgam of berry-ish flavors.
Bard Target would be a good one, you know.
Yes,
like go for that like impact because what have you got? You've got Red Bard obviously, but you've got your Red Bulls, Monster, Rockstar. So yeah, Party Bard would be pretty good.
Ooh, we could do a Party Bard passion fruit mango.
Ooh,
alcoholic.
So basically, we're making Four Loko now.
Yep.
Okay, cool.
Yep.
Four Loko is our energy drink and the flavor.
And the flavors.
Thanks, Patrick.
Dennis Nichols says, vacation or staycation? And regardless of your preference, what's your preferred vacation spot and why? Vacation. Mm-hmm. Every chance that I get now. It used to be staycation. Now it will be vacation. Preferred vacation spot sounds like it's a place that you go to often. Mm-hmm. As a, oh, we always get away to the cabin or whatever. Mm-hmm. I don't have something like that. Mm-hmm. But from now on, my preferred vacation spot is going to be somewhere with clear oceans, mm-hmm. preferably warm enough to not need exterior gear, so that I can go scuba.
Oh, nice.
Yeah.
Nice. For me, it's a mix. Vacation is definitely more appealing.
Mm-hmm.
Staycation, I just wish I had a lot more staycations. I want to take a vacation from my staycations.
Yes.
You know, which, oh, the language nerd in me is, because vacation literally means to leave. It's just, it's the, you know,
vacate.
Yeah, exactly. The event of leaving. So staycation doesn't work because the sea and yeah, anyway, my favorite spot right now is probably Orcas Island. I've had the best vacation times there. It's close enough to home to where mm-hmm. I'm not gone so long that, you know, I feel like I'm leaving stuff, just like I stuff isn't getting done or whatever. It's a good place to go for a weekend. I would obviously like to do a long vacation to somewhere very not here. That would be great. But favorite implies something I can do over and over again.
Mm-hmm.
It's got to be close enough to where I can return home, but also far enough to where I don't want to for a while.
Right.
And I think Orcas Island really hits that for me.
Yeah.
I don't like true camping. I like glamping. That's fun. Mm. But again, the language. Ugh. I don't like true camping. But having a cabin where nature is a step out the door,
mm-hmm.
but comfort is a step in the door. I love that. That's fantastic. Yeah. They just need better beds.
Yeah. And rustic is fine.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't have to be full of amenities.
No, just no.
Cooking, refrigerating.
Heat
and water.
Water, yeah.
Comfortable place to lie down.
A place to poop. That's super important.
Yeah.
I don't want to have to dig a hole if I can avoid it. Tom Brophy writes, what are you more excited for, Avengers or Deadpool 2? If Avengers, any predictions on who's going to die? Why does it have to be my favorite to predict that? Because I think I'm more excited for Deadpool 2, to be honest.
Mm-hmm.
But I've got predictions about who's going to die. How about you, Scott? What do you
in Deadpool?
No. Well, in Deadpool, we just know who's not going to die.
Right.
That's the big thing about Deadpool.
Yeah. I'm excited about Deadpool 2 to see if they can continue exactly. making good choices
mm-hmm.
in that. Or are they just going to do the same old...
Well, sophomore...
Oh, number two.
Yep. Number two. You know. It's
and it doesn't have to be... as good as Deadpool, because no. it won't be, because it was so fresh.
Right.
But are you going to make the same mistakes that everybody else makes when they start
doing
stringing
sequels,
these out?
Right.
Or are you going to make it, you know, can I buy
mm-hmm.
that? I didn't think anyone was going to die in the Avengers because I thought all things being equal, they're unkillable.
So... A lot
now
of
I have to start worrying about my superheroes not being around anymore.
I mean, a lot of contracts are up. So they're going. I think they're going to do a major death, and I think that major death is going to be Tony Stark. If I had to pick, it's going to be Tony Stark. Anybody who has had a single recent film is probably pretty safe. So if you just had one and you're marketable and all that stuff, you're probably pretty safe. So I think Guardians is probably going to be safe. Most of the Guardians will be safe, though they're easy to pick off because people, and this sounds terrible because people love the movies, but nobody cares about them. Mm-hmm. Like, oh, if they die, well, that sucks. I mean, Yondu was probably the most impactful one you could have picked out of the whole group.
Yeah.
Which is messed up because he was kind of the bad guy until you realized he wasn't.
Mm-hmm.
So I think someone pointed out Peter Quill is kind of dating Thanos' favorite daughter. So that puts him on the shit list. I don't think he's going to die. I don't think Ant-Man is going to die. Well, he can't. Ant-Man and Wasp is still coming out.
Right.
So I think Iron Man is on the table for sure. I think Hawkeye is on the table for sure.
Mm-hmm. What's Scarlett's character?
Scarlett Johansson. I mean, Black Widow, I don't think is on the table for a weird reason. Like, I think Captain America is on the table. I think Winter Soldier will survive. Absolutely. I think Bucky's totally safe, but I think, Steve Rogers might be on the table because he's died so often in the comics. Same with Thor. They've died so often in the comics and handed the mantle over. So of the main characters, anybody from Loki's on the table for sure. I mean, he's died 4 times now, so whatever, but like, I think permadeath, this is going to be a permadeath. Pepper, fuck. I mean, there's a lot of people who are eligible, but if I'm drawing a line in the sand, I think Tony Stark for sure. I'm almost positive Tony Stark is going to die because he needs to. The way we've set up this universe, we never saw Uncle Ben go, which I'm thankful for. I'm really happy we never saw Uncle Ben go. But we need a motivator for Peter Parker. Iron Man is his sort of surrogate father.
Surrogate father now.
So he might be motivation. That would give him a reason to fuck with Happy a lot more, which is really funny and it's really cute. So I think Stark is dead.
But I want Marissa Tomei to get the boy.
Oh, to get Tony?
Yeah.
Dude, I don't know, man. I feel like
Marissa or Winona?
Marissa Tomei is.
It is Marissa. Yeah. Okay.
I don't think Tony can handle her. Literally, she deserves better than Tony Stark.
Oh, yeah.
Like, that's sad, but it's true. Like, she's fucking amazing. Even as just Peter's aunt, she's amazing.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think you're going to see potentially some of the outliers. I think good examples of people who are up for death from the newer films are the questionable gray area characters. Like M'Baku is probably a good candidate for dying, which is unfortunate because I really liked M'Baku. I don't think T'Challa will die. I'm almost positive he won't die. He's got too many more movies in him. But Shuri, I mean, dude, I don't know. Like, there's a lot of supporting characters that could go.
Mm-hmm.
Martin Freeman is definitely on a possible list, but he's not a hero. He'd be more like your Agent Coulson
death.
So, yeah, I guess that's my answer is definitely, definitely Tony Stark. And then a few others are possibilities.
Cool.
Yeah. So that about wraps it up this week. Again, a reminder, if you want to play some tabletop gaming with us, which you really do.
Yeah.
Please, please head over to discord.twobards.com. Sign up in the contest entries section or shoot us an email, thebards@twobards.com. That's thebards@twobards.com. And we will get you put into that drawing, which ends next Monday.
Yes. And so, it's not that we don't want to play with the 3 people who are already signed up. That would be an epic party if that's
stands. I'm not going to complain if this is how it hashes out. That's actually pretty cool.
Yeah. But
so, but yeah, I mean, please, 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 please,
yes.
You know, get in there, sign up. Let's make this a little interesting at least.
Yeah. Don't make it too easy on them.
And without further ado, many, many, many thanks to our Patreon backers.
Hawk Robinson.
Oh, James Peters. He counted.
Wesley Sedlak.
He counted. I know he did. Rob McLennan.
Zombie Orpheus Entertainment.
Gordon D. Duke.
Tobin Dax.
Dennis Nickel.
Jay Blanken.
I fucked with it. I don't care. Casey Lee.
Dougie Sharp.
He's got his own Instagram now. Todd McKimmy.
Lotta Jerf. Was for the Instagram, not for the Lotta.
Tom Brophy.
Laura Adams.
James Herbert.
Bo Pritchard.
Tim Martin.
Brad Roberts.
Jennifer Reifenberry.
And Rival Guy.
And a huge, huge thank you to the person who makes our ramblings make sense to the general public. Linkmaster General, thank you.
Yes. Thank you very much, sir. I salute you.
He actually did, but it was British style. Or Weeblo style. I don't know.